A couple of weeks ago, the National Media Museum announced that they would be transferring a large part of their photography collection to the Victoria and Albert Museum in London. I went to speak to Martin Barnes, who is the curator of photographs in the museum, to ask him how this had come about. We spoke as we were walking around the museum. The recording is initially quite noisy, but it gets quieter as we continue talking.
The Science Museum offered us the collection. And
when did they phone you up one day and say?
It's been quite a few months in discussion and planning.
Yeah.
And we had to go through a phase of working out whether we were the best place to do that and how we could accommodate it, what we would do with it if it came here, and start thinking about the logistics of it. So there's been quite a few months worth of discussion, and there's still a lot more to do.
So did it come to you as a fully realised plan? Did they say, we've got these specific items, or was it an open-ended discussion to begin with?
No, there was a listing of which parts of the collection they felt would be good for them to transfer.
And, yeah. Did you reject anything off the list?
No.
Did you ask for anything extra?
No.
You could have haggled for more.
Well, there's a lot already.
Yes.
And it seems like a very sensible list, which is helps the Science Museum, I suppose, refocus on a more STEM science agenda.
After speaking to Martin, I thought I should get the perspective of the Media Museum. So I took a trip to Bradford, and there I met and spoke to Michael Turwey, who is the head of collections at the museum.
At what point did you say, OK, we should go and talk to other people about this?
We made the decision to go and talk to other people over the course of the last year when we were thinking about what is the best way forward for these collections and, I suppose, for our photography programming kind of overall, and where should we be putting our resources, etc. So that happened over the course of the last year.
Had you already decided what you were that you were intending to move a segment of the collection?
No, not at that point.
Were you asking them, well, to put it crudely, would you like some of our collection?
We asked people to talk to us about what their aspirations were for their photography collections, and we did talk openly about kind of that we saw parts of our photography collection as being not necessarily core to what we were doing as an institution.
How did you decide who you were going to talk to? Was it basically anyone who had a national collection?
We are a national collection. These are national collections. Those are our peer institutions.
Is there a sort of natural fit, I suppose? Would you, you know, the national collections could include the British Library or the National Maritime Museum. Did you say, oh, we've got some pictures of ships, maybe we should go and... I mean, I'm being crude, but...
No, they only keep negatives, actually, the National Maritime Museum.
Right.
They catalogue them by the name of the ship rather than kind by even by the name of the photographer.
You sort of said that you don't want to name institutions, but, I mean, there aren't really many more than the V&A and the Tate, maybe, that would be candidates for...
That information is not in the public domain at the moment.
Okay.
So,
could you say how many people you spoke to?
I'm not going to kind of get into that kind of level of detail. There was a process. There was more than one kind of institution that was kind of considered, and there was a process that we went through, which involved a number of different people, certainly within the museum here and kind of museums in London. And we asked for kind of a lot of information from them around their kind of aspirations and what they would do and what they have at the moment.
I spoke to Martin Barnes last week, who's obviously one of the parties, and he said when the museum, your museum, came to him, it was with a list which he could agree to or not agree to.
It was a list which kind of was an illustration of kind of, you know, the collections that are held here. we have been working through the collections information that we have and kind of presenting them in particular ways. But you know, it's not straightforward, because these again are, you know, you could say how many things by this particular photographer are going, and that's not been what we've been thinking about. We've been thinking about what are the large bodies of material, because if we're saying pragmatically that there is an economic imperative at work here as much as other things too, then it is about first looking at the kind of the large bodies of material and thinking about those first and foremost, and then thinking about the other things. I mean, I would say as part of normal museum business, we review our collections and we do transfer things. Last year, we had acquired about 40,000 TV adverts from a number of different kind of collections, which had, you know, in the 90s and early 2000s, private collectors, organisations had kind of folded. This stuff was at risk of being thrown away. At that point in time, the BFI didn't necessarily have the resources or be interested in kind of acquiring them. This museum acquired them. And very quickly, we found ourselves in a situation where we couldn't digitise them, we couldn't make them accessible, the rights clearances were a nightmare. We were literally sitting on 40,000 cans of stuff that we couldn't necessarily do anything with. But over the last two or three years, the BFI have started to invest particularly in kind of advertising and think about that as being part of British Television heritage. And last year, we transferred that whole collection to them because it made sense. So I suppose there's a degree to which this is kind of museum practice, where we kind of work with other public institutions to make these kind of alterations every now and again. But at the same time, I also recognise this is something that's on a slightly unprecedented scale because of the situation. I think Martin has said before as well that, you know, it's good that national museums should work together in these kind of ways. We think this is a good moment for us to do this because it makes lots of organisational sense for us, but it's not a small undertaking to do.
And Martin Barnes again.
Does the fact that you have this high status acquisition mean that you can make an argument that we should have two more photography curators here and four more staff to help us digitise and all the rest of it?
Obviously it helps. But like every project, it needs planning for resources, and so we need to say, well, what do we want to do with it, and therefore what are the resources that we need for it, and then we have to bid for the resources, and some of that might come from within the museum and some of it might come from outside. So we need the support of, you know, friendly benefactors and grant giving bodies, and demonstrate that we can do something significant with the collection, and if the idea of what we can do with it is convincing and exciting, then, you know, the funding often follows. But it's a huge job, and it's going to take a lot of planning and resources and support from people within the museum and the community of people who, you know, care about photography outside of it as well.
There's a question away from your own personal responsibilities, but I suppose in a way it is part of your responsibilities as the curator of a national collection, is the view of how photography is held across national collections. The Media Museum has called itself the National Collection of Photography in the past. It'd be hard to see it as the National Collection of Photography now all of this material has come to you. So do you think you will be the National Collection of Photography?
I mean, my view is that the National Collection of Photography resides in many different places throughout the UK. So although Bradford took on that mantle and called itself that and had a kind of centre of gravity, the reality is that photography extended into and outside of Bradford, in terms of the national collections, into the Tate and the V&A and the library at Birmingham and the museums and libraries in Wales and Scotland and the Imperial War Museum and the Public Record Office and the many, many places that have collections of national importance in photography. But, you know, the responsibility of a national collection is not just in one place.
Photography is only one part of the remit of the V&A, which is a museum of the fine decorative arts.
Yes.
Would photography be better served if it had its own museum or it had its own dedicated institution?
Well, I suppose if you look at what's happened to Bradford, if it had been funded better and resourced and decentralised, supported genuinely by government, then you would have a different situation. Well, I mean, this is an old debate, but whether it's better to corral all of one medium into one space or whether to distribute it more evenly with different interests, you know, is... That's a very, you know, ongoing and old question.
I mean, there's no such thing as the National Photography Collections, no. And there is no such thing as, you know, everybody knows and has been written about and talked about, there is no national strategy for photography collections, and that's because the institutions aren't set up in that kind of way. The Science Museum Group and the National Media Museum in Bradford need to make the decisions based on what is best for what we're set up and here to kind of do. The fact that there isn't that kind of policy framework within which those things can happen is arguably a kind of weakness of in the kind of sector, because it leaves us to then have to make those decisions without the overall view of a kind of national strategy for photographic collections.